Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we talk about is related to organizational health and the world of work. I'm your host, Pat Lencioni. Got the full crew here today. I was going to say Bodie. We like to say that instead of Cody and Bo, but Cody, Bo, and Tracy, how are you guys?
We are awesome.
Everybody waits. Nobody wants to be the first one.
I always go first, gentlemen.
Okay.
Well, Bo was the first part of Bodie, so I was letting Bo get a chance in here, but I'm doing great.
And I'm going to try to make as long a pause as possible before I say, well.
All right. Karen is here, and Matt is back from Hawaii, looking a little bit tan as an Irish-looking guy can look. Looks good. So, Cody, what are we going to talk about today?
The title is WD-40 for Organizations.
That's right. WD-40 for Organizations. That is not an unpaid ad, by the way, although we could do that. WD-40 is quite handy. But what we're talking about here is basically, we were going to call it, but it was too long, the motor oil for the organizational machine. WD-40, it's a lubricant. And relationships are the answer to this question. And that is, what is the secret ingredient to getting through difficult things in organizations? And it's relationship. And I know that sounds extremely obvious or generic, but knowing people on a deep level and having some history with them and getting to know them and nurturing that relationship is the very thing that prevents an organization from grinding to a halt when something difficult comes up. And it's one of those things that seems so obvious, but it's worth exploring here because we really need to work at this, and it's something that's inherent in everything we do in the five dysfunctions of a team and when we work with leadership teams.
It does sound fairly obvious, and it sounds in particular obvious to us probably because we care about that, and folks who listen to us hear us talk about this sort of thing all the time. What do you think is the resistance to fully leaning into high trust relationships at work?
I think it's vulnerability, right? I mean, human beings do not come out of the womb wanting to be vulnerable. And so this is at the basis of the five dysfunctions of a team. A person to build relationship with another person has to be vulnerable, have to be able to admit when they're wrong, have to admit when they have needs, you know, and that is the key.
I was thinking, Pat, I love this analogy because like the idea that it's the motor oil, we didn't say it's the gasoline or the engine. It's that like the right amount of motor oil is what causes less friction that allow, you know, like the machine can still operate a little bit if you have very little motor oil. I mean, obviously it'll seize up if it has none, but the idea that when you just said, hey, the basis of this is at the bottom of the pyramid, I almost feel like if you think of it without the motor oil, you could look at it would be the four dysfunctions of a team, right? You just eliminate the vulnerability at the bottom, which is the really relational piece of that triangle, and just say, hey, if you have an organization that just does conflict all the way up through results, you can probably get by. But when friction arises, that's when it's going to cause a problem.
Yeah. And you know, you never interview a team, a pit crew or the pit boss of a car race where they just won the race and they said, what was the key to victory? And they'd never say the motor oil. In fact, I remember thinking, what the hell is motor oil? I know there are different kinds of gas and tires and the engine and the torque and all that other stuff, but it is the motor oil that is not very sexy and nobody will ever say that's how many seconds we saved on the race. But in an organization, it's the relationships you have which prevent the engine from breaking down. And I think that's part of the reason why people misunderstand it, because it's not a real obvious differentiator.
The other thing I like about this word picture is that oil is something that we know we have to change in our cars. You know, it used to be every 6 months. Now it's every 5,000 miles or whatever it is. And I think relationships can be something we just take for granted that are there. And what leaders have to do is they have to think about it like it's the oil in our car, that we're actually going to make sure that we're spending time developing relationships. Relationships do not just exist. They have to be nurtured and developed in an environment where they're getting stronger.
Yeah, and I think, Bo, that they're also really messy. Relationships are hard and they're messy. And I think that your question, why don't we do this? It's because they are so messy.
Yeah, I completely agree. And that's why when we do the first exercise we do with any team we work with, and this has been true for decades, and that is we do something called the personal histories exercise, where we say, tell us these things about yourself, because that's the foundation of building trust and relationship through vulnerability. And every single time we do it, people are like moved. Somebody's moved to almost tears, mostly in empathy, but for like what somebody else went through in their life. And now you start to see the first level of motor oil, if you will, being developed in this machine. And then we're constantly going back. And when people take the five dysfunctions of a team survey, the assessment, one of the questions we ask is, how comfortable are people talking about their personal lives? Mm-hmm. And this is why, because the more you understand one another, the more comfortable you are to go to those places, so that the first time a conflict occurs or an obstacle, the gears aren't going to grind to a halt.
Mm-hmm. And there's something implicit with that, Pat, is like being willing to want to understand your peers, where it's not just like this. I mean, imagine a leader or CEO getting up in front of his or her company and saying, hey, we don't want you to become friends at work. You know, like that's sort of comical to think about. They're not going to say explicitly don't develop relationship at work, but they very much undervalue how important it is to say the opposite of that, which is like, hey, we want you to come to work. We want you to be productive and engaged, but we want you to enjoy the people that you are working with, because there's a real business advantage to people that that build relationship, because when it does come time where there's friction in the engine, you can cycle through it faster. You kind of have empathy and vulnerability with each other, and you can move through it. Whereas without that, it comes to a complete halt.
I worked at an organization where 90 days in, they would ask you a series of questions. And one of the questions was, do you have a best friend at work? And I always thought that was a little strong. Do you have a best friend at work? But I like the idea that the sentiment that you would have somebody at work that's your go-to person. And what I found, especially in large organizations where you can't know everybody, is the entire organization benefits from other people's strong relationships. It's not just that I know everybody and their kids' names, et cetera. It's I benefit as a team member when other people have really strong relationships.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I remember I've heard people give advice to managers early in my career saying, don't be friends with the people you manage. Mm-hmm. And people shouldn't be too close to one another at work. Mm-hmm. And some companies have rules like you can't date somebody at work. Now, if you're in a four-person organization, I suppose that might be a little bit awkward. But then finally people start realizing, no, we want people to actually want to spend time with each other and care about each other. You know what? We could have actually said, instead of relationship, we could have said love and made it even more ridiculous sounding, but it's actually true. The greatest competitive advantage in an organization is that people that work there have love for one another. And you know, I don't remember that. Somebody wrote that book called Love is the Killer App. Gosh, I wish I remember who that was. It was years ago during the big high-tech boom. And it was a CEO of a company that IPO'd. And he wrote after and said, no, the killer app in the world is love and how people care about one another. And man, do I hate touchy-feely things. So if this sounds like, oh, let's love one another, it really is more practical and necessary than this might sound. Tim Sanders is the guy. Thank you, Karen. Tim Sanders wrote that book called Love is a Killer App.
Well, and Pat, I just want to make this super practical, because I know that everything we do on this podcast, we're so afraid of being touchy-feely, but just the other day, you had just said this about a conversation that you and Tracy had. It would perfectly encapsulated this idea of motor oil in the sense that you've built a relationship over the better part of three decades. So Tracy, what happened in there, and how does that, you know, emphasize this point that it's actually practical and not esoteric?
Yeah, we were actually in a really interesting content meeting, and it was difficult. Anytime we're creative, it gets heated at times. And I was sensing Pat was frustrated. He was acting a certain way. And I took a little time out and I said, hey, Pat, why are you doing that right now? And it took some vulnerability for me to say, hey, what you're doing right now isn't working for me. You seem like you're angry, and we just did a timeout. And let me tell you, that meeting completely changed. And at the end of it, it was so incredibly productive, but it took a little timeout for us to go, hey, this is not working. What's going on here?
Yeah. And she was like, you seem frustrated. Is it because you're thinking that I'm thinking this? And I was like, yeah. She's like, I'm not thinking that at all. And I'm like, oh, okay. So we were missing each other. But the fact that we know each other well enough to go there is what allowed us to turn what could have been a very uncomfortable and non-productive meeting into like a breakthrough one. And it was yes. all about having the relationship to be able to have that conversation.
Yeah.
What motor oil does, I think, is I don't actually know anything about engines, but I think it helps keep engines from getting overheated. And one of our friends mm-hmm. describes healthy relationships this way, is that, you know, when you're in shape, you recover more quickly from a hard workout. And when you have a strong relationship with somebody, the recovery from a moment where you miss each other or might have some conflict is a lot faster. And we've all been in an environment where we've tried to keep the conflict at bay. And then when it comes up, it's this big ordeal that takes tons of cleanup. But we've also experienced really healthy relationships that when the conflict comes up, you can move on from it quickly. That's what great organizations do. They're able to recover quickly through conflict to help get to the best ideas. They're able to pivot more quickly. They're able to embrace change more rapidly.
So mm-hmm. let's make this really practical for people and say, so what is it that an organization has to do that says, yeah, I get this. I think most organizations underdo relationship, by the way. For every one where people know each other too well and it's uncomfortable, which is what lawyers will tell you to avoid. They're like, oh no, don't get too close because a lawsuit will happen. For every one of those, there's 1,000 that don't get near close enough to building strong relationships. So we have to overcome that. So if somebody says, yes, I believe this and I want to build more of a relationship culture as a strategic advantage that can avoid, you know, breakdowns within the machine, what are the things that have to happen? How do you go about doing that? Let's be practical. Yeah, I feel like I'm making you guess at what I'm thinking, but I'm curious as to what you're thinking.
Well, as you were saying that, Pat, I was like, oh, there's some organizations out there who say like, oh, well, we do a happy hour on Fridays and we hope that people, you know, like they do these sort of haphazard events where like, oh, we have a suite at this golf course, so everyone in this department can go. But I really think there's a level of intentionality that people need to go beyond just an experience. Or there is something to be said for people spending time together. But if you're going to build real relationship, it can't just be about, oh, hey, we went to this race car, you know, like racing event together. It has to be, and it can be as simple as, hey, here's three questions we want you to ask at lunch across the table. Like, we want you to be intentional about the time that you spend together. And I've been at both of those things. I've been at one where you're at lunch and they just think that the conversation is going to play out however. And then ones where they're a little bit, just the tiniest bit intentional. And the ones where you're a little bit intentional pay way bigger dividends than just the haphazard ones.
Absolutely.
I think about the episode we did a couple months ago called Start Wasting Time, where we talked about the importance of getting offsite together. So I think that's something. But Pat, when you said, what would something practical that you could do? You could try. You could just try. Try to have relationship with people. Show up and put your phone in your bag and ask a question. Be vulnerable. Get to know somebody. Ask about the picture on their desk.
The leader should just do it first. And the leader should not only try and also say, hey, if the leader goes to a meeting and goes, hey, you guys, you know, I'm a little frustrated today. I got something going on at home and this is hard for me, or this is what's happening in my family. Suddenly they've just said, this is actually okay. And most people are going to go, oh, tell us about that more, because they want to know that the leader is comfortable with that. Everybody else is at some other day is going to need to be the one to say that. And boy, just recently, we've had a lot of things going on in our lives here, and we always do, but the more we take time to talk about it, the more the meeting that comes right after that, we get more done. Every time we're like, I'm so glad we took, sometimes it's like 20 minutes up front to talk through something that somebody's going through. So I think the leader has to go first in all these things, and they have to take a risk, because there's always the chance that people just sit there quietly and go, I don't want to talk about that.
I think that risk, that's exactly the word I was going to use, Pat, is the idea that, you know, in the context of the 30-year relationship you and Tracy had, yeah, you have some built-in trust. You guys can ask each other, is something going on here? But you have to take the risk, you know, if you walk in the room, or I walk into the room with Bo in the morning and I'm not being myself, there's a risk to say, hey, is something going on? You know, or is there something outside of work that's bothering you, because you normally don't show up this way? And giving people the benefit of the doubt. I actually have been a recipient of this so many times, where someone says, hey, you're not really always like this. Is there something going on? And to be able to say like, yeah, there's a lot going on at home and I'm sorry I'm bringing that here. It's a wonderful thing.
You know, I got to say something, Cody. You exaggerate. It's only been 28 years for Tracy and I. So calling it 30 is just overstating it like you usually do. But I will tell you this, though. There were times, it's not just having worked together. I would say there are times when we lean into this. And mm-hmm. I've probably developed stronger relationship with Tracy over the last 3 years mm-hmm. than I have in the first 25. And so it's not just time together. Sometimes people think, well, relationships come because you spend time together. It's being willing to take an interest in things going on in their lives and opening up. And sometimes just a couple people in an organization who are uncomfortable with that kind of vulnerability, as we talk about this, they can create a sense where nobody really wants to be vulnerable. So you kind of, the leader has to go first, and the leader has to say, this is something we're all going to dive into together.
And I think it's worth mentioning, Pat, because I'm sitting here thinking about the three friends that I just talked to over the last week who used to be in a co-located environment, and now they work from home, and there's less and less opportunity around a lunchroom table, or less and less opportunity around a water cooler, as you know, archaic as that sounds. But this requires a higher level of intentionality than it ever has in the past. You might have been onboarded to a team that has not met together for a while, and that's sort of the for the foreseeable future. And relationships don't happen overnight, the kind that you and Tracy have built over that amount of time. But you need to be so intentional about accelerating the relationship that you have with your peers. And maybe I like Bo's suggestions, like it doesn't have to be everyone. It's ridiculous to think that we can all have the same level of relationship with 10 members of our team. But if you have one or two or even three people, that would change the dynamic of that team dramatically.
Absolutely.
I think some things that get in the way is the way that we've always done things and the environment that we typically work in. So if you're trying to build a relationship in a boardroom where you've always looked at your TPS reports and looking through PowerPoint decks, it's hard to then have that environment be the one where you lean in and say, we're going to get to know each other. So very simply, you could change environment. Go to a different meeting. Go to a different space to be able to start that conversation. And then another thing I feel like I've learned from you, Cody, is the first 4 minutes matter so much. That if you are trying to build relationships, if the conversation, if you spend 10 minutes talking about the weather and about the NBA finals, it will be very hard to break through to have a vulnerable conversation. So just be the one that says, hey, we're here because I want to get to know a little bit more about you and your family. I want to know what you're looking forward to this summer. I want to know what's going on. Whatever the thing is that helps break the ice, do it early in the conversation and watch the depth of relationship increase.
Totally. So the leader should be willing to go first. Also know that it's going to involve a little bit of a risk and it's worth it. And then I would say keep it simple. We've all talked about this, and it kind of reminds me of the last podcast we did about big little things. Relationships come about through big little things. And it doesn't have to be like a big thing, like we're all going to Europe together, or you know, it's like little things we do at the office. Like somebody told me recently that instead of just saying, hey, how are you doing? Saying, how are you feeling today? You know, that's the difference between I'm fine versus like, I saw some people after church yesterday and they were like, how's it going? And I was like, I don't know, what am I supposed to say? But if somebody said, how are you feeling these days? How are you doing personally? That would make me want to go to share something. So little things like that can make a big difference, I think. And so I want to talk about some of the feedback we've gotten around little big things. So Matt called through, but we got a lot of great feedback around this. You know, somebody sent us a great note. Bob is his name. And he said, a great example of little big things is the TV show Ted Lasso, where, and if you've ever seen that show, it's this American guy who takes over a soccer. It's a really wonderfully moving show and it's funny, but he's quite a good, he builds a culture on a soccer team in Europe, in England. And he talks to this journalist at one point because they're all like hate the guy because he doesn't know anything about soccer. And yet he ultimately starts to turn things around. And he has this conversation where the journalist says to him, he says, hey, Ted, your team, it's going to work. And he goes, what? And he goes, your football team, this whole idea of total football. And Ted says, okay, why? He says, I'll tell you why. It's because it's the Lasso way. You haven't switched tactics in a week. He goes, I haven't. He goes, no, you've done this over 3 seasons. He goes, I have. And the journalist who didn't like him said, yeah, but slowly and surely you're building a culture club-wide, built on trust and support through thousands of imperceptible moments, all leading to their inevitable conclusion, which is total football. Hmm. And Ted says, well, how about that? And that's what he says, a thousand little things that he, and if you watch the show, he's constantly doing little things to change the culture of the organization. And every one of them on its own would seem silly, but they're all big little things. Here's let's keep it in England now and go from Ted Lasso to A Christmas Carol by Dickens. There's a great quote in this. So you know, and I don't know the characters' names, it's not in here, but you know, they work in an office. And I don't remember the names, but this one guy says, he's talking about the boss. He says, he has the power to render us happy or unhappy, to make our service light or burdensome, a pleasure or a toil. Say that his power lies in his words and in his looks, in things so slight and insignificant that it is impossible to add and count them up. What then? The happiness he gives is quite as great as if it cost a fortune. And the point is, every little thing adds up, and a bunch of little things taking the chance to be intentional adds up to a whole bunch. And I feel like I'm just reading and reading. Isn't it? What do you guys think?
That's really cool. I don't remember that from the Muppets Christmas Carol, but but it sounds great.
Post-literate, exactly. Here's one, a company used to celebrate people's anniversaries and spend a lot of money on it, companies, but their profits were down, so they had to cut that. And so this guy said, I just decided every time a person's anniversary would come up, I'd take 30 minutes and write a really thoughtful note about the first day they started and what they've done there and interesting things about their personal lives. And he said when he finally retired, that was the thing people talked about more than anything. So that comes from Kip. Oh, I love this one. I love this one because I like when people do things that people think are going to be stupid and they aren't. This guy had a local company that serviced people's copy machines. They sold and serviced copy machines, right? Every year they would get an ice cream truck and they'd drive around to every single one of their customers and serve them ice cream. And then every year, and this setup, everybody would go, when is ice cream day? I think they might've done it every 6 months. And they became known for that. And then the employees were like, we want to go on the ice cream run. And so employees got excited about it and their customers got excited about it. And imagine somebody going, you know what we should do? We should bring ice cream to all of our customers once every 6 months. And if 300 companies said that, 298 of them would have said, come on, that's stupid.
Yeah.
And they did it. And people are like, we love the fact that you do this. We remember you because of that. We tell other people about that. That is a big little thing. Oh, here's the last one. I got to do this one. So there was a church that on Mother's Day, they give mothers a gift. And they usually, they buy them a gift of some kind, but because of the supply chain, they didn't come in on time. So here comes Mother's Day. The pastor's like, what are we going to do? They went out and bought seeds, which cost like 5 packs of seeds for $1. And they gave every mother, and they said, here's a bouquet of flowers, some assembly required. People were bringing pictures of their flowers that they planted for months. What a little thing that makes a big difference. So thank you. That comes from Brian. That's wonderful. I want to thank everybody for listening to the podcast, for sending us great stuff. We've got more stuff to share next time. Thank you for listening to us. And remember, relationship, it's the WD-40 of your organization. Invest in it. It matters. God bless you.